morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Prairie is a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Coffee drinkers. Independent congregation. Prairie was fortunate. We had some, we must have had a reporter. I don't know if that's fortunate, but we must have had a reporter here last week because we had a very nice write-up about the program. I was glad I was not here, so I was in my own name in French, but the Capital Times on Monday did carry a nice program. I'll post that in the back for those that haven't seen it. Prairie's newsletter, The Prairie Fire, is printed in the Washington Hotel. Many of you may have seen the rhythm section of the Madison newspapers this week featured the Washington Hotel and how it is a place for gay members of our community to associate and congregate, and it's a safe haven for them. Perhaps not surprisingly, it burned last night. And so that it's, they're still fighting the fires as we speak. I thought it was not coincidental that that building existed for 90 years or whatever it did, and it burned last night after that kind of favorable response in the newspaper. So our speaker today will be speaking about issues that will relate, I think, very directly to the climate in this country that may lead acts like that. Let's hope it's an accident, but my suspicion is that that this is too much of a coincidence. We're going to start with the chalice lighting, and I think Fran will be doing that.
This quote is from John Stuart Mill. The only freedom which deserves the name is that of pursuing our own good in our own way, so long as we do not attempt to deprive others of theirs.
This morning, though, we are very fortunate to have Leona Ballard to talk to us about challenging the radical right. Leona is a Madison resident and a First Unitarian Society member for the last 5 years. And she began her personal investigation of the religious right in 1991. Since that time, Lee has taught classes and given lectures on the subject for civic and retiree organizations and religious groups. And she was here a couple of years ago and spoke with us. Anyway, we are very delighted to have you here this morning, Lee, and thank you very much.
My goodness, so many familiar faces. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. And I can't think of a subject that is more relevant than the subject for today. I'm here mainly by way of background for our resolution called Challenging the Radical Right that some of you have copies of on your chairs, which we will be speaking to later on. And I'm going to present this morning a condensed version of a talk I gave a couple weeks ago for the Plato Lecture Series. Plato is a group of Madison area retirees. Today, the religious right has clout. Lots of clout. Clout means the power to influence and pressure government bodies to enact policies and pass legislation beneficial to an individual's or group's or movement's interests. The religious rights clout has been increasing since about 1980. But since the recent midterm election, this clout has soared. Why? Because the religious right delivered on November 8, 1994, just as carefully planned and predicted. It was a low turnout election, and the religious right powers knew that with low turnout elections, they had the organizational tools and techniques to tip the balance to their chosen beneficiary, which just happens to be the Republican Party. Prior to that election, Ralph Reed, the executive director of the Christian Coalition, said that from then on, religious conservatives no longer had to bargain for their agenda because the candidates they supported and helped so much to elect had run on the coalition's issues. Then he suggested that religious right activists should use this approach to the new legislators. I worked for you. Now, how can I help you to get our agenda accomplished? First, the Christian Coalition backed and supported Newt Gingrich's political manifesto, The Contract with America, with over $1 million they raised in 1995 for this purpose. While only some of the Christian Coalition's social agenda was in this contract, payback was promised down the road. The legislative clout of the religious right-backed Republican freshman class and its allies in the Congress the last 12 months has been very strong and intractable, for better or for worse, depending upon your point of view, often bringing even Newt to his knees. And what did the religious right get in return? The payback was support by the Republican Party for the Christian Coalition's self-styled contract with the American family, much of which has been introduced into the House already. You may not have heard too much about individual contract with the American family issues, because instead of introducing them into the House individually, where they would be subject to public hearings and debate and media publicity, these issues have been sneaked into often completely unrelated appropriations bills. No wonder Bill Clinton has been wielding his veto pen, and no wonder the Republicans will not pass the line item veto while Clinton is still in office. Now, in fairness, sneaking legislation into appropriations bills is a time-honored technique of both parties. But instead of just plain old-fashioned pork, many of the sneaked items are very contentious ones, such as abortion-related issues. To summarize then, for all practical purposes, as we speak in February 1996, the social agenda of the Republican Party in the federal government, many state governments, and many local governments is in the control of the religious right. Why? An enormous amount of grassroots work, organizing, 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 using some evangelical churches and related groups as vehicles to disseminate the message. Their leaders and some pastors convey to these workers the underlying invocation that God is on their side on all political and social issues on which the religious right takes a stand. Moreover, anyone who disagrees with their positions on the issues is judged guilty of anti-religious bigotry against people of faith. Those are two of Ralph Reed's very favorite expressions. Who are the conservative political activists collectively known as the religious right, and what is its agenda, and how has it taken over the Republican Party? One definition of the religious right is, and I quote, an array of politically conservative religious groups who are attempting to influence public policy based on a shared cultural philosophy that is antagonistic to pluralism and church-state separation. The movement consists mainly of Protestants, most of them evangelical or fundamentalists, a far smaller number of Catholics, and a smattering of Orthodox Jews, unquote. I'll elaborate later on the principal groups and individuals who make up the religious right, but first a bit of recent history. Incidentally, that quote was taken from the book put out by the Anti-Defamation League a couple of years ago, and I've forgotten what it's called, but I'll look it up later. The religious right's involvement in modern American politics was preceded by the development of Barry Goldwater's Southern strategy for the 1964 election. I remember that election very well. A lot of you youngsters don't. But the idea was that Republicans could win Democratic voters by playing to backlash against the civil rights movement and against the federal government's action to end segregation. In 1968, Richard Nixon expanded this Southern strategy by targeting not only the George Wallace constituency in the South, but also Northern Wallace Democrats in urban neighborhoods where school and housing battles were being fought. In addition, Nixon targeted suburbanites who had fled the cities, including blue-collar Democrats, also the natural constituency of George Wallace, who had strong showings in the Democratic primaries. When George Wallace was shot in 1972, Nixon not only inherited Wallace's constituency, but according to recent Wallace biographer Dan T. Carter, I quote, "The whole current political majority built on symbolic politics of backlash among whites. The Alabama governor compounded racial fear, anti-communism, cultural nostalgia, and traditional right-wing economics into a movement that reshaped American politics in the 1970s and 80s. Not only for Wallace's Democratic Party, but appropriated by the Republicans. At the same time, anti-feminist fears were generated by the formidable Phyllis Schlafly and her allies, who proved to the Republicans that being against the women's movement meant votes and money for their party. In my view, this was the beginning of the modern Republican backlash politics that has expanded exponentially ever since, using tactics of exploiting fear and hate as tools for winning votes. The strategy is to whip up passions that divide so that people will vote against their own economic interests, interests that are usually seen as the prime vote getters, in favor of backlash, anxieties, and loathings. There was no particular effort to recruit evangelical Christians by the Republicans while one of their own, Democrat evangelical Christian Jimmy Carter, was in the White House. But when Carter's re-election looked vulnerable, some Republicans changed tactics. In 1979, Paul Weyrich, Richard Viguerie, and Howard Phillips, leaders of the very conservative wing of the Republican Party known as the New Right, who considered Nelson Rockefeller a raging liberal, thought that they could recruit evangelical Christians away from Carter. However, they needed a religious leader to smooth the way. So they recruited Jerry Falwell, not the other way around, who, with a few other evangelical preachers, began the Moral Majority. Thus, the genesis of the organized, mobilized religious right and its alliance within the conservative wing of the Republican Party. Ronald Reagan was the person they thought the answer to their prayers. When, as President Reagan did not support the religious rights social agenda to its satisfaction, although he did support it a lot, the movement shifted tactics. By then, the religious right organizations had multiplied greatly, and their collective efforts were redirected to local issues in an effort to control the Republican Party from the ground up. This they have done with great success in the past 7 years. The enormity of this success was manifested in the 1994 takeover of both houses of Congress. Conventional wisdom is that in many states, the three main issues exploited were God, guns, and gays. And since 1994, Republican moderates have become an endangered species, with the politicians amongst them leaving in droves. One other phenomenon contributing to the rise of the fortunes of the religious right should be mentioned here: the changing religious demographics in the United States. In 1960, mainline church Protestants made up 41% of the white electorate. Mainline meaning the liberal Protestant churches such as United Church of Christ and Evangelical Lutherans in America, and Methodists and Episcopalians and so forth. They made up 41% of the white electorate. But between 1960 and 1992, the mainline Protestant percentage of the electorate declined from 41% to 22% of the electorate. During the same time period, there was a vast increase, not only in the sheer numbers of evangelicals, but in the numbers of evangelicals who were persuaded to vote, supporting Republicans by an 82% advantage in 1992. Today, the religious right, comprised mainly of evangelical Christians, is the most reliable Republican Party base, and the religious right will be courted by the GOP no matter what the sentiments of Republican moderates and politicians, moderate voters and politicians. Who are the main players in this religious right wing of the Republican Party? Aside from his scurrilous videos attacking the Clintons, Jerry Falwell's efforts have declined quite a bit in recent years. Then who are the powerful players in the religious right movement, and what are their issues? I'm going to list a few of the most important. American Family Association, leader the Reverend Donald Wildman, main issues cleaning up movies, books, and televisions. They continue a newspaper advertiser identification campaign against sponsors of violence, softcore pornography, and extreme profanity on TV, and they advertise in Madison newspapers always saying they are outraged. They claim a membership of 1.5 million families. Citizens for Excellence in Education, leader Robert L. Simons, main issue attacking public education. Simons says that separation of church and state is a socialist myth. Concerned Women for America, leader Beverly LaHaye, main issues anti-public education, anti-secular humanism, anti-feminism. She says that, I quote, "One of the most devastating enemies of the family is radical sex education in the public school. It is far more explicit than is necessary for the good of the child. Too much sex education too soon causes undue curiosity and obsession with sex." Unquote. Beverly LaHaye is married to the Reverend Tim LaHaye, a co-founder of the Moral Majority and of the Institution for Creation Research, which opposes evolution theory and promotes creationism. He believes that, I quote, "The demand of the humanists for complete human rights is not just a campaign, it's an obsession." Unquote. Eagle Forum, leader Phyllis Schlafly, main issues anti-public education, anti-homosexuality, opposing the Equal Rights Amendment, anti-abortion. She is credited with the defeat of the ERA in 1982. Schlafly wields enormous influence in the shaping of the social policy of the religious right and the Republican Party. She's very much underrated in her personal power. Family Research Council, This organization is a spinoff, probably for tax purposes, of James Dobson's focus on the family. Gary Bauer, a former Reagan domestic policy advisor and undersecretary of education, is the Family Research Council's head. The main issues are family concerns. Bauer criticized the Clinton crime bill because its Family and Community Endeavor Schools program would bar any tax funding for religious worship or instruction. Bauer says that religiously motivated fear remains the best antidote to crime. Quote, almost all the research, when you boil it down, has concluded that crime is kept under control by a combination of fear of punishment in this life and a fear of punishment in the next life, unquote. Bauer is a strong advocate of using churches to administer welfare block grant programs. Rutherford Institute, leader John Whitehead, main issues, anti-public schools, anti-separation of church and state. The Rutherford Institute provides legal services in many constitutional lawsuits for religious groups. Whitehead says, I quote, it is a little surprise then that the First Amendment, as well as the entire Constitution, was written to promote a Christian order. Traditional Values Coalition, leader the Reverend Louis Sheldon, main issues, anti-homosexuality and sex education. Sheldon says, I quote, we Christians were here first. You don't take over our shared common values and say they are biased and bigoted. We are the keepers of what is right and wrong, unquote. Sheldon was on Wisconsin Public Radio recently advocating the encouragement of Christian religious activities at the workplace, both public and private. His very attractive daughter or granddaughter, Andrea Sheldon, is a frequent guest on radio and television as an advocate of exclusively abstinence-only sex education programs in the public schools. Heritage Foundation, Free Congress Foundation, and National Empowerment Television. Leader of all three groups, Paul Weyrich, one of the early New Right activists. His main issues are conservative economic issues and heavily into media, including the new National Empowerment TV used by most religious right organizations and conservative politicians. Weyrich was an active supporter of Clarence Thomas's Supreme Court nomination. He says, I quote, we are talking about Christianizing America, unquote. And lastly, the two largest organizations, first, Focus on the Family. Leader, James Dobson, PhD, a licensed psychologist. Budget, as of a few years ago, $78 million a year, 1,000 employees, 8 periodicals, 5 radio programs on 2,000 stations. Issues, pro-school prayer, anti-gay rights, pro-school choice, anti-pornography. Dobson's Focus on the Family is the number one evangelical ministry by income. The organization's mission is, and I quote, committed to the lordship of Jesus Christ and his principles for the success of the family unit, unquote. One of his board members is or was Susan Baker, the wife of Reagan's Secretary of State, Jim Baker. Dobson takes no salary from Focus on the Family, but he sells a lot of books, including the bestseller, Dare to Discipline, which emphasizes the need for administering pain in child rearing. Dobson helped serial killer Ted Bundy to accept Christ before his execution. Focus on the Family helped to energize and financially support the Promise Keepers men's movement that fills stadia across the United States with males and exhorts the men to regain their primacy and control over their wives and homes. Focus on the Family is one of over 70 evangelical Christian organizations and companies that have migrated to Colorado Springs, Colorado as a part of the nationwide $2 billion evangelical Christian economy. Bumper stickers around Colorado say, "Focus on your own damn family." And finally, the Christian Coalition, a part of the Pat Robertson Empire, and I use the word empire advisedly. Pat Robertson is undisputedly the major figure of the religious right in the 1990s and is president of the most powerful political organization amongst religious right groups today. Its 1994 IRS return indicates a budget of over $21 million, and the organization claims to have more than 1.7 million members. However, the Christian American magazine, which goes to all coalition members who contribute $15 or more, said in its postal statement that it sent out 310,000 as of September 1995. Prior to this, its circulation was 353,000 people, indicating a drop. Ralph Reed is the Christian Coalition's brilliant young executive director and is a former campaign staffer for Newt Gingrich and Jesse Helms. Building on the campaign organization and voter lists that Robertson established in his 1988 run for the presidency, and organizing at the grassroots level using telemarketing, direct mail, and compiling computerized lists of voters guaranteed sympathetic to their cause, and ignoring all other voters. The Christian Coalition has been very successful, not because they are anywhere near a majority, but because of voter apathy. The Christian Coalition's strategy is based on the premise that in high turnout elections, they're decided by 15% of eligible voters. Because of those eligible to vote, only about 60% are registered and 30% actually vote. Therefore, 15.1% of eligible voters determine the outcome, and this is in high turnout elections. In low turnout elections, as was in the case of the 1994 off-year election, the winning percentage drops to 6 or 7% of eligible voters. To inform voters, the Christian Coalition's volunteers use the mechanism of the presumably nonpartisan voter guides and congressional scorecards, aided and abetted by pulpit encouragement when they can obtain it. Since the Christian Coalition is a 501c4 nonprofit tax-exempt group, it can lobby, but its primary purpose cannot be partisan political activity. The voter guides are half-page comparisons of the candidates' stands on selected issues purported to be family values concerns, with the wording and choice of these issues manipulated and stacked to conform to the Christian Coalition platform. Over 300 versions of the voter guides are prepared to fit local political situations. The congressional scorecards are similarly manipulated, featuring carefully selected family values issues, such as the balanced budget amendment. Did you know that was a family values issue? Incidentally, in the 1996 congressional scorecard, on a scale of 1 to 100, 100 being most favorable to the Christian Coalition, Russell Feingold scored 10, Herb Kohl scored 50, and Scott Klug scored 79. Prior to the 1994 off-year elections that delivered the Republican Congress, the Christian Coalition claims to have delivered 35 million voter guides and 17 million congressional scorecards, and it says they phoned 3 million voters. Christian Coalition is just a small part of Pat Robertson's efforts. His 700 Club program is broadcast twice a day in Madison at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on the cable Family Channel, which Robertson owns personally. Watching this program over a short span of time, say a few weeks, can give anyone an education on the agenda of the religious right. The 700 Club's spin on the carefully selected news during the first 15 to 20 minutes of the show illuminates Robertson's political views very well. His choice of guests, as well as experts, is a litany of conservative politicians, ministers, writers, and right-wing think tank representatives. Robertson's use of Christian people. But the minute you turn the document into the hands of non-Christian people and atheistic people, they can use it to destroy the very foundation of our society. And that's what's been happening. Incidentally, who are some of these non-Christian people? Well, this doesn't include this audience, but anyone who happens to be Presbyterian or Episcopalian or a Methodist qualifies as a non-Christian person. Robertson says, and I quote, "You say you're supposed to be nice to the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians and the Methodists and this, that, and the other thing. Nonsense. I don't have to be nice to the spirit of the Antichrist. I can love people who hold false opinions, but I don't have to be nice to them." Lord only knows what they say, what he says about Unitarians. Robertson often reinforces the patriarchal, misogynistic, Christian fundamentalist creed. And I quote, "I know this is painful for the ladies to hear, but if you get married, you have accepted the headship of a man, your husband. Christ is the head of the household, and the husband is the head of the wife, and that's the way it is, period." If we had a lot of time, I would love to give you about 50 more Robertson quotes, but that's why he hired Ralph Reed, who is much smoother. Another of Robertson's efforts is called the American Center for Law and Justice. In 1990, Robertson instituted the ACLJ, which is located on the campus of Robertson's Regent University, to be the religious rights answer to the American Civil Liberties Union. Headed by Keith Fournier and Jay Sekulow, the ACLJ uses staff and pro bono lawyers across the United States to support their causes, many of them pro-school prayer and anti-abortion, concentrating a lot on First Amendment issues. By choosing its cases carefully, the ACLJ has had a lot of success and reportedly has an $8 million budget. Now, I've listed just the most well-known religious right organizations. There are plenty more, from local grassroots organizations up to the national level. Now we get to where I believe lies the most serious implication for the survival of our democratic institutions. There is a policy-making umbrella organization, including many religious right organizations, named the Council for National Policy. The CNP is a group of 500 plus members, and it's very secretive, that combines the politicians and wealthy businessmen who support the religious right with the religious right leaders themselves. The CNP was founded in 1981 by the Reverend Tim LaHaye, who I mentioned previously was a founder of the Moral Majority and the Institution for Creation Research, and whose wife heads the Concerned Women for America, along with wealthy businessmen T. Cullen Davis and Nelson Bunker Hunt. The goal of the organization is to make the members' shared moral values dominant in domestic and foreign policy. The Council for National Policy's current president is Reagan's Attorney General Ed Meese, and former presidents include Pat Robertson, and Amway's owner, Rich DeVos. The six permanent committees of this DNP are Family, co-chaired by Dobson and Focus on the Family, and Phyllis Schlafly of Legal Forum. Law and Justice, co-chaired by Ed Meese and a former Texas Appeals Judge, Paul Pressler. Economics, chaired by former OMB Director Jim Miller, and Reed Larson, head of the National Right to Work Committee. Defense and Foreign Policy, co-chaired by Senator John Kyle, Republican of Arizona, and Howard Phillips of the Conservative Caucus. And Institutional Reform, co-chaired by former California State Senator H.L. Richardson and direct mail expert Richard Viguerie. And Environment, chaired by former Secretary of the Interior and Secretary of Energy, Don Holdell. The Council for National Policy has some other familiar names on its roster. Elected Congressmen Dick Armey, Dan Burton, Tom DeLay, Robert Dornan, Ernest Istook, Lauch Faircloth, Jesse Helms, Trent Lott, and Don Nichols, all Republicans. Businessmen, I won't name them all, but a whole bunch of them, including the Coors family, is very prominent. George Gilder, the trickle-down economist. Other council members are all those religious and political leaders I mentioned earlier in this presentation, plus Alan Carlson, president of the Rockford Institute, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Bob Jones III, president of fundamentalist Bob Jones University, D. James Kennedy, televangelist and pastor, talk show host and presidential candidate Alan Keyes, and a name that's been in the news this week, Larry Pratt, president of the Gun Owners of America, John Sununu, and more. Now, I've taken the time to tick off all these names to demonstrate that the obviously very well-organized religious right is now so intertwined with the far right wing of the Republican Party and the conservative segment of the American business community that it is difficult to separate the religious right's support for Republican political and economic issues from its distinctly social and religious issues, the culture wars issues, if you will. What are some of the issues this alliance is promoting? One listing of issues to press hard for in 1996 from the Council for National Policy was contained in one of their action alerts, which came out a couple weeks ago. One, a permanent Hyde Amendment, anti-abortion. Two, limit K-12 sex education funding to abstinence-only curricula. Three, promote education vouchers for religious schools. Four, prohibit unmarried couples from adopting children. Five, prohibit government funding in any way for abortion. Six, zero funding for the Goals 2000 program, which is a national K-12 educational standards initiative. Seven, a 40% reduction in funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. And eight, eliminate the office of Surgeon General. Other goals of the religious right and their allies for this Congress are cut funding for the Legal Services Corporation that provides legal representation to the poor, dismantle Bill Clinton's National Service Program, reject the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. The religious right claims that this treaty would usurp parental authority. Hold up Bill Clinton's judicial nominees so they can't be confirmed before the 1996 elections. Deny employment discrimination protections to gays and lesbians. Repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and reinstate the ban against gays in the military. Amend the Constitution to ban flag burning, restrict free speech in cyberspace, defund or privatize the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, abolish the National Endowments for the Arts and the Humanities, pass a parental rights bill, which watchdog groups on my side, say will give religious right parents a type of constitutional trump card to override any decision public schools make that they don't like. Dismantle the Department of Education. pass government-sponsored charter schools legislation, reinstate the abortion gag rule, defund Planned Parenthood, defund Title X, which provides family planning services for the poor, and many, many more abortion restrictions. The Council for National Policy and its members and its member organization has taken credit for a number of recent conservative victories in Congress, including the defeat of the Clinton health care plan. You should have heard Pat Robertson go on and on about this on the 700 Club. Defeat of allowing gays in the military, sidetracking the Freedom of Choice Act, preventing the passage of the Fairness Doctrine in Broadcasting, stopping the EEOC Commission from prohibiting religious harassment in the workplace. Let me repeat that. One of their successes was to stop the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission from prohibiting religious harassment in the workplace. They want to be able to proselytize everywhere. And blocking the lobby reform bill. Those are their successes. Besides the activity of religious right organizations to spread and enhance this agenda, there are more than 2,000 radio stations and dozens of television stations delivering the religious right message, accounting for more than 10% of U.S. broadcast licenses. And the network of evangelical Christian bookstores now accounts for 1/3 of total domestic book sales. I've gone on at great length covering some of the history and the players and the strategies and issues of the religious right movement in the United States up to 1996. Now, what's next? Well, we're in the middle of the Republican presidential caucuses and primaries, and it's been very interesting to watch the enormous influence of the religious right on the presidential candidates of that party. Estimates are that a minimum of 20 Republican state organizations are controlled by the religious right, and 12 or more so are strongly influenced by it. The January Christian Coalition magazine and 1996 calendar are devoted to get out the vote information and exhortations, especially in the primaries. Listening to all the Republican presidential candidates, except for maybe Steve Forbes, invoking the religious right litany continues unabated. The Christian Coalition hopes to raise $2.5 million for its 1996 Get Out the Vote, Christian Vote project, and hopes to distribute a total of 40 million congressional scorecards and voter guides in churches, mailboxes, and shopping centers across America. As we saw from their great success in shaping the social agenda of the House of Representatives as payback for delivering the 1994 election, they're not about to give up their clout easily. Whatever your opinions about exploiting pious church workers to advance selected political and economic ends so that they can get control of the social agenda, those who disagree have to credit the religious right leaders with one whale of an organizational effort. Of course, Republican moderates and pro-choice, Republican pro-choice voters are the sacrificial lambs. The American voter is not stupid. As any marketing major knows, opinion can be shaped by repeated soundbite saturation. This repetition of the old Southern strategy litany of grievance and hate and fear can be manufactured and bought and paid for, just like Pepsi-Cola, and transformed into a culture war. Combine this so-called culture war with a connection to personal religious promise of salvation, and you have a business, government, born-again religion connection that smacks of theocracy at its worst. I was going to end with comments by some writers which would speak to the objections that we have in our resolutions, our UA resolutions regarding religious rights. I've gone on longer than my allotted time. So I will end there. Thank you very much.
Well, I wanted to get on to the resolution, but first I think we ought to take just a couple of minutes to answer any questions that you might have, that you want to ask me.
Yes, I have read a lot about the efforts to bring the conservative Catholics in. The Christian Coalition apparently is playing up these efforts much more than actual numbers of conservative Catholics would indicate. The National Conference of Bishops has gone on record opposing the Christian Coalition's agenda. Only a couple of very conservative bishops are supporting their efforts. So this has been very much overblown. There are a few. There is some conservative Catholic support, but it doesn't amount to all that much. Believe me, the IRS is very carefully examining Pat Robertson's books, and there are several court cases in process right now. He's very careful to where he lists a Republican, he will list the Democrats too with their opposing view. And by focusing on issues, the quote family values issues like the balanced budget, that's how they get around. But he has been scrutinized very, very much and continues to be. Okay, I have to dig out something here. The best watchdog organization, in my view, is called the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. The group headed up by Barry Lynn, and their monthly, they are located in Washington, D.C., and I think the information about them has been in the World magazine many, many times. Their address is 1816, that's 1816 Jefferson Place, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036. Barry Lynn is a congregational minister who is by far the most articulate person supporting the Unitarian point of view that I have ever heard. People for the American Way is marvelous also. But Barry Lynn's group is more focused on religious right issues only. Americans United for Separation of Church and State, but just the first two words will get information to you. Their monthly magazine called Church and State is the best condensation of all the issues that would be of interest nationwide to the Unitarian point of view that I have ever come across. There is also the Interfaith Alliance, which is a spin-off of Americans United, along with other groups, that is trying to organize to counter the religious right. Interfaith Alliance.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
Sure.
On your seats, at least every other seat, I put the challenge to the radical right, which is the third resolution that we have considered this month, challenging the radical right. And what I want you to do, we're not going to read through that, but you can read it yourself and make comments if you feel that there's anything you would like to change on the sheet, and leave it in the back room. Also, last week, the first program we did on population and development, we didn't have time to really get into this. So I have, and I've only had one response on that one. So I have copies of it and the one on children on the back table, which I would like for you to comment on too for the resolution. Anyway, I just want to give you a little background about what the Unitarians, how they have been responding to this. The new religious right in 1981
A UU Board of Trustees resolution spoke out against such groups as the Moral Majority and the Christian Voice. The UUA Board of Trustees named these groups a divisive force in society and called upon all religious bodies to avoid abusive language in dealing with those who disagree with them and to affirm the principles of freedom and tolerance upon which the United States was founded. The Radical Religious Right, 1981, a business resolution, acknowledged this group as a threat to the values of the free church and society and called upon the UU to work together with groups such as People for the American Way and the National Council of Churches to challenge this threat. There have been 6 resolutions pertaining directly to the separation of church and state, speaking out against tax dollars for private schools and creation-based textbooks. Among them, Separation of Church and State, 1973, resolved to uphold religious neutrality in public education, opposing all mandated prayers and devotional observances. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Lou, for a thought-provoking introduction to the religious right.